Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Yuma Daf Yud. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur continuing with the Gemara's focus on different place names. We had started this discussion as a result of the discussion between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, in which Rabbi Yochanan made reference to the Pasuk Yaft Elokim Liefes, and as a result of that discussion, which we're not going to review right now, it was necessary to point out that Yefes was the forebearer of Poras, of the Persian Empire, leading us to quote Psukim, in which we made an association between the descendants of Yefes, Tiras specifically, and Poras. We pick up today's Gemara 12 lines from the top. Vatehi reishis mamlachtoi bovel v'erech v'akad v'chalne. The Pasuk makes reference to a number of places and the Gemara explains. And when the Gemara explains, it's mentioning place names that were most likely familiar to the Gemara. Maybe for us they remain as obscure as the Pasuk itself. Be that as it may, we continue. Bovel kimashmo. Bovel, Babylonia, as its name implies. Erech, which was mentioned in the Pasuk, ze Urichus. Urichus being the place more familiar to the Zman of the Gemara. The Akkad, ze Baskar. Chalne, ze Nofer Ninfi. The Pasuk says, Min ha'aretz ahi yotzo Ashur, from that land there came forth Ashur, Toni Rav Yosef. The triangle here is a continuation of the series of triangles that we featured at the end of our previous year. So Rav Yosef teaches, Ashur ze Silak. Silak, again, a place known to the Gemara. Vayiven es Ninveh ves Rechovos ir ves Kelach. Ninveh kemashmo. Ninveh was referred to in the Chumash and remained with that name for many years later into the time of the Gemara. Rechovos Ir, Zu Poras Demeshan. Kelach, Zu Poras Debursif. The Pasuk says, the Esresen Bein Ninveh Uvein Kelach Hi Ho'ir Hagadola. Resen Ze Aktisphon. Resen was known by the term, by the name Aktisphon. Hi ho'ir hagdola, that is in the pasuk, ein yodea. But I, reading the pasuk, and you have the pronoun problem, the word she was a big city, but ein yodea, I don't know, im Ninveh ho'ir hagdola, im resen ho'ir hagdola, because when you read the pasuk, the pronoun could refer to either one of them. Keshu omer, when you find a pasuk elsewhere in Sefer Yoina, it says, "V'ninveh hoisa ir gedola lelikim mahalech shloshes yomim." The pasuk in the book of Yonah describes Ninveh as a very large city. Would take you 3 days to walk from one end to the other. Heveyomer Ninveh hi hoir hagdola. So Ninveh is the large city. The Gemara continues with names. V'shom Achiman Sheshai v'Talma Yilide Hoanok. A reference to the city of Hebron in the Chumash, in which these personalities had lived. Achiman, Sheshai, and Tamai, the descendants of the giant. And these were people that were themselves of gigantic proportions, as we will see in the Gemara. Rashi mentions the reason for this is simply because we were engaged in mentioning place names. This also deals with names. Here, not places, but rather people. Tona, Achiman, miyumon shevachim, the strongest or the choicest of those brothers. Sheshai shemesim esharetz kishchisus. When he walked, he would trample and destroy that which he walked upon. Talmai shemesim esharetz tlomim, that as he would walk along, he would create furrows in the ground, like a telem is a furrow created by a plow. another take on the names, Achiman, not so much a drush on the names, but rather what they did. Achiman Bono Anas, these are place names. Sheshai Bono Olush, Tamai Bono Tabush. Yelideho Anok, the Pasuk says, Shemanikim Hachama Bekoimosam. That when you would look up to them, it would be as if the sun were being eclipsed. In other words, their head would block out the sun, leaving just a rim of light surrounding their heads. An anok is a necklace, so that it would be simply like a ring or a necklace around their heads. That's how tall they were. Omar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Omar Rebbe, Asido Roimi Shetipo Biyar Paras. We mentioned earlier Paras, so continuing with that reference, Rabbi Shimon Levi says that in the future, Rome will fall into the hands of Paras. Now, as far as what is really meant, what's being referred to here, these type of topics, when you're dealing with the future, they are, in all truth, they are rather obscure. Some people like to add more tangible explanations, ways to make it more realistic for us. It's somewhat hard to commit oneself to those approaches, but there are those that claim that Rome is the forebearer of the church, Christianity, those that are associated with the what today would be described possibly as the Western world, Paras being associated with Persia. In as this recording is being made, you would associate that with the area associated with possibly Iran or the Arab world. Again, we cannot commit ourselves to any of these pshatim, but Rebbe's claim is that Rome will fall into the hands of Paras. Shenemar, Lochein Shimu Atzas Hashem, Asher Yoatz El Edoim, Umach Shevoisov, Asher Choshav El Yoishve Taimon, Imlo Yis Chavum Tsiire Hatzon, Imlo Yashim Aleim Nevehem. Now, in this posuk, we see a reference to the Tsiire Hatzon defeating Edom. Edom being associated with Romi. Edom is associated with Esav and his descendants, and along with his descendants we include Rome. This having been said, we're making an assumption that Tzirei Hatzon is a reference to Paras. Maskif Lo Rabo Barulo. My Mashma, Rabo asks, My Mashma Tzirei Hatzon Parasu. Based on what do you conclude that Seire Hatzon is a reference to Paras? Dichtiv, is it because it says Ho'ayil Asher Ro'iso Bal Hakornoyim Malchei Modai Uporas? Because in the Pasuk you see Ayil. Ayil is a ram. A ram is a sheep. It's a male sheep, which is a subcategory of the term Tzon. Tzon includes goats and sheep. So in this Pasuk you see an aisle, and you see a reference to Paras. Well, if that's your basis, V'emo Yovan, I can suggest alternatively that Tzirei Hatzon is a reference to Yovan, translated often as the Greeks. Dichtiv v'hatsofir hasoir melech Yovan. So Yovan is associated with the goat, which is also a subcategory of Tzon. Ki solik Rav Chaviva bar Surmaki Omra Kamei Dahu Merabonan. So when Rav Chaviva arrived, so he said over Rabbo Bar Ula's attack on that which Rebbe had taught. Again, Rebbe taught that Rome would fall into the hands of Poras based on the assumption that Seire Hatzon is Poras. Rabbo Bar Ula challenged that. Well, Omar Lay, so the Hahume Arbonne, that particular rabbinic figure, heard Rabbo's challenge, so he responded, Mandalo Yoda Perushe Kroi, he who doesn't know how to explain Psukim, Moisiv Tiyufto, the Rebbe has the audacity to challenge Rebbe's teaching, my Tsire Hatzon, what does Tsire Hatzon mean? Zutra da Ahui, he is the, it's a reference to the youngest. Sa'ir is the young of the Tzon. So it's the youngest of the brothers, the Toni Rav Yosef. Tiras ze poras. Use your arrow that you see to the immediate right hand side of the Gemara. Align this with the arrow from the upper part of the page. That is referring to the list of the sons of Yefes, and the youngest, the last one of them, was Tiras, and Tiras was associated with Poras. So it's clear as day that Seire Hatzon, the youngest of the Tzon, has to be a reference to Poras, and not Greece. Omar Rabo Bar Bar Chano Omar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Loi. Now, you'll see the use of a house marking in two different directions, and this is to indicate the opposite approaches of that which is featured here. The first is Romi falling into the hands of Poras, and the other approach, Poras falling into the hands of Romi. So you can see how vague or doubtful what the true outcome in the future will be. The Gemara continues with this statement made in the name of Rebbe Barbaloi, Asida Romi Shetipo Biad Poras. In the future, Rome will fall into the hands of Poras. This, by the way, is in similar to that which Rebbe had taught on the second of the widest lines. Now, the Gemara continues, not citing a pasuk, but rather using kal v'chomer logic. Kal v'chomer, uma mikdosh rishon shebanu b'nei shem v'chrivuhu kazdayim naflu kazdayim b'yad parsayim. Mikdosh rishon, the first base of mikdosh, was built by the Jewish people, b'nei shem, the descendants of Shem. Shem is one of the three sons of Noach, Shem, Ham, v'Yefes. Shem being the forebearer, as the psukim in the Chumash indicate, the forebearer many generations before Avram Avinu, Avram being the forefather of the Jewish people. So the first temple, which was built by King Solomon, of course a Jewish king. So the look at this, the Beis HaMikdash, the first Beis HaMikdash, was built by the Jewish people. It was destroyed by the Kazdayim. Kazdayim are the Babylonians. Naflu Kazdayim Biad Parsayim. So the destroyers of the temple were overtaken by the Parsayim. So the Parsayim defeated the destroyers of a Beis HaMikdash that they themselves, the Parsayim themselves, didn't build. Mikdashani, the second Beis HaMikdash, Shebonuhu Parsayim, Vehechrivu Romayim, it was built by the Persians. The Persians themselves had the merit of building the second Beis HaMikdash, and it was destroyed by the Romans. And there's precedent for destroyers already falling into the hands of the Parsayim. So here, we've got the destroyers of that which the Parsayim themselves built, Enodin, Shiiplu, Romayim, Biad, Parsayim, all the more so the Romans are going to fall into the hands of the Parsayim. So that's Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Loi's proof that in the future Rome will fall to Poras. Omar Rav, Asida Poras Shitibol Biad Romi. Rav takes the opposite approach, that Poras will fall to the hands of Romi. Omrulei Rav Kanav Rav Asi l'Rav. So the Rav Kanav Rav Asi challenged Rav. Benuye Biad Siturei, the builders will fall into the hands of the destroyers, Romi being the destroyer of the second base. I mean, don't just that. Is that logical? Amalu, in, that is what is going to happen. Yes, in means yes. Gezeros Melechi, it's the ruling of the Almighty. That's his will. If we don't understand it, that's too bad for us. That's a human shortcoming or a human lack that we have to sort of live with. But the Almighty has his ways. Iko Diamri, Amaluhu. Another version is in terms of Rav's response to the question of Rav Kana and Rav Asi. Another version is he, Rav, said to them, Inhu Nami, the Persians themselves aren't angels. Ha Kosasri Bei Kinishta, they are destroyers of shuls. And it's interesting to note that it's mentioned, I believe, in Maseches Megillah that a shul is considered a mikdash ma'at, a form of a minor base hamikdash, a minor temple. So the Persians are associated also with temple destruction, so that their being overrun or being defeated by Romi should come as no surprise. Tanyo Nami Hochi, we have a Tanaic source supporting this. Asida Poras Shetipo Biad Romi. Chado, one reason. Desasri Bei Kinishta, they are destroyers of shuls. And two, and the ode, Gezeras Melechu Shiyiplu Boinim Biad Zosrim, that even though they are builders, they built the second Beis HaMikdash, they shall fall into the hands of the destroyers, the Romans. The Omer of Yudah Marav, Ein ben David bo at shetifshot malchus Romi harosha al ha'olam kulo tisho chadoshen. That the ultimate redemption through Ben David, through the descendant of King David, we refer to as the Moshiach ben David, he will not come until the evil empire of Rome spreads over the entire world 9 months. 9 months is a figure of time associated with pregnancy. The Shenemar, the Pasuk says, Lochein Yitneim Ad Eis Yoleida Yolda V'Yetzer Echav Yeshuvun Al Bnei Yisrael. So this Pasuk is in that particular context, and you see the terms Yoleida Yolda featured the birth process. Exactly what is meant by Rome spreading over the whole world? Again, that's something that is quite vague and unknown to us. But if you assume that Rome is represented by the Western world and the concept of democracy and all that entails, so one might try to make an association. But here in Gemara Markings, we emphatically do not commit ourselves to any of those pshatim, those explanations. We continue in the Gemara with a topic heading on the side, Nosei Klali. We indicate this is a general topic heading until Yud Beis Amud Aleph, and we're introducing what it will turn out to be a rather long sugya. We're here on Daf Yud Amud Aleph, and this discussion will continue to Yud Beis. Din Bayis, Bekeshul Mezuzah Nugoyim. We're going to be looking at the concept of a house. We say concept because we're going to have to analyze what is required in having a mezuzah, or what is subject to Nugoyim, even if we're not going to be discussing an actual house in the simple terms that we associate with the word bayis or house. So, in other words, we're going to be including other kinds of structures in our discussion. That's as far as a general topic heading. A more immediate topic heading, the Nosei. We will talk about a mezuzah. Number one, Belishkas Parhedrin. As far as affixing a mezuzah to the chamber known as the Parhedrin chamber, this is the chamber in which the Kohen Gadol, who was going to officiate in the Beis HaMikdash during Yom Kippur. He was relocated there for a period of 7 days before Yom Kippur, as we learned at the beginning of this Masechta in the first Mishnah. So mezuzah in the context of that chamber, and number two, the Sukkah Sachag. A sukkah is a booth often covered with branches. And when speaking about Sukkah Sachag, we're talking specifically about the sukkah associated with the holiday of Sukkot. It's a structure that's set up to stand for 7 days, and it has a branched roof to it. Does that need a mezuzah? And we also have markings that we want to note. The bow tie will be used on this omid to highlight shnei noisim, two topics. In other words, the two topics we just mentioned. So if you glance at the page, you see l'shochos, that's a reference to chambers, and second line from the bottom, another bow tie, sukkah sachag. In addition to those markings, we will see a diamond appearing, and that highlights a hezber ha'amoroyim, three of them, l'shita satanoyim v'noisim halolu. We'll have Amoroyim appearing, commenting on these topics, so that if you scan ahead, you can see Rabbah is featured here, and on the second line from the top of Omid Beis, you see Abaye, and further down, you see Rava. So now, with that in mind, the hope is that we're pretty clear on the general scheme of things. We're going to be dealing with the mezuzah requirement. Tanu Rabbanan, Kol Halishochos Shehoyu BaMikdash. All of the chambers that were built in the that were in the Beis HaMikdash, Lo Hoyu Lohen Mezuzah. They did not have a mezuzah. There was no requirement to have a mezuzah on them. Chutz Milishkas Parhedrin, except for that chamber, Shehoyu Ba Beis Dira LeKohen Gadol, because it had a dwelling for the Kohen Gadol. And a mezuzah is the pasuk says al mezuzos beisecho visharecha. So a mezuzah is associated with beisecho, a dwelling. Omar Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda reacts to the Tanakama and he says, "Valo kamo lishkois hoyu b'mikdash hoyu lehem beis dira." There were numerous chambers that had dwellings in them. Numerous beis hamikdash chambers that had dwellings in them. "Valo hoyo lohen mezuzah, elo lishkas parhedrin." And even though they had dwellings in there, they did not have a mezuzah requirement. The only chamber having that was the Lishkas Parhedrin, but the reason for it is not because of the Kohen Gadol having dwelt there. Rather, Gezeira Hoysa. It's a rule, and later the Gemara will deal with what is the rule or the special enactment regarding the Lishkas Parhedrin, what made it different. The Gemara continues. Actually, before we begin the Gemara, let us just point out, and we have a little starred note on the side that in which we mention the Tanakam Rabbi Yehuda agree that the Lishkas Parhedrin has a mezuzah, but for different reasons. The Tanakama mentioned because it's a Beis Dira LeKohen Gadol, and Rabbi Yehuda says it's a gzeira, it's an edict, it's a ruling. So the Gemara continues, my time of the Rabbi Yehuda. What is the reasoning behind Rabbi Yehuda? Omar Rabba, Kosar Rabbi Yehuda, Kol Bayis Sheinu Osli L'Moisacham L'Moisach Shomim, any dwelling that's not designed for year-round dwelling, Einoi Bayis, and it is not considered a dwelling, and hence it doesn't come under the Torah's requirement of Al Mezuzos Beisecha, Esvei Abaye. You'll notice the double underlining is used to introduce the challenges that are raised in light of what we said, Abaye's challenges. So, Esve Abaye. There is a pasuk, though, that says, V'kesi beis achoref al beis hakayitz. So, what do you see from here? You see that a bias is associated with one season, choref of the winter, or with the kayetz. So that what Rabbah claimed is explaining Rabbi Yehuda that a structure that is not year-round cannot be called bias. Here you see something that's not year-round and is called bias. Omar lei, so Rabbah will answer. Bias base choref ubase kayetz ikri. Bias stamo lo ikri. It's called a base choref. It's called by using a compound term. We call that a shame levai, an accompanying term. But a strictly pure bias, if it's one seasonal, it's not called a bias. Bias stama means a bias in a neutral, without a compound term. If it's seasonal, it's only seasonal as opposed to annual, it's not considered a bias. Esve abaye. Well, we have a Tanaic source. Again, we'll be challenging Rabbah's claim. It says in this source, Sukkos HaChag B'Chag, Rebbe Yehuda Mechayev V'Chachamim Potrin. The Sukkah of the holiday of Sukkos, Rebbe Yehuda is Mechayev in a mezuzah amongst other things, and the Chachamim exempt. V'Toni Allah, and commenting on this, Rebbe Yehuda Mechayev Be'eruv Uve Mezuzah Uve Meiser. When Rebbe Yehuda says, when Rebbe Yehuda is Mechayev, he is insisting, he's saying that it is obligated in laws of Eruv, laws of the Mezuzah, and laws of Meiser. Well, before we explain any further, the question is fairly clear already. You see here something that's not annual, or in other words, it's not year-round, and yet it has a Mezuzah requirement. You might say, okay, yeah, it's required, but only rabbinically. But it's not a Torah-level requirement. So rabbinically means it's a rabbinic stringency that's imposed, but it's not something that's part of the basic halacha. And hence, this wouldn't represent a real question on Rabbah's explanation, meaning Rabbah said that from a Torah standpoint, if it's not year round used as a dwelling, it's not obligated in mezuzah. The sukkah, it's true, it's not year round, but its sukkah requirement is only rabbinic. That's even Rabbah could agree with that. However, to claim that this source is speaking on a purely rabbinic level, that is going to be hard to say. And hence Abaye's question will continue. Before we go further, let us explain. Rebbe Yehuda says that Sukkos HaChag is chayev in Eruv. What does that mean? That means if you have a courtyard, you have several permanent dwellings that open onto the courtyard, and included in amongst them is also a sukkah, which is not a permanent dwelling. You have a sukkah that opens onto the same courtyard. All members of a courtyard, in order to carry in and out of their houses into the courtyard, from their houses to the courtyard and back, need to contribute food. Each member of the courtyard contributes a portion of food, joining them together, placing the food in one of the houses, in effect creating a single entity of ownership, so to speak, which is a rabbinic requirement for carrying on Shabbos, without getting into any further detail. So if one of the structures in the courtyard happens to be a sukkah, so the owner of that sukkah also must make a food contribution in order to form what we call Eruv Chatzeros. So Rebbe Yehuda is Mechayev, the sukkah owner of the Sukkos HaChag, the holiday of Sukkos, owner of his sukkah, to contribute to the Eruv, the mezuzah we explained already, and Meiser. Now, what is Meiser? Meiser is a reference to the tithing of one's produce. When does produce become required in tithing to the extent that you can no longer eat from it until it is tithed? So the cutoff point, or the, we'll call it the point at which it becomes obligated in being tithed, is the point at which grains or produce that has experienced its gemar malocha, it's been processed, it's reached its final stage of processing, is then brought into a house. It's called Ri'as Pnei HaBayis. Now, when we say being brought into a house, Rabbi Yehuda is saying even brought into the holiday sukkah. That would be mechayiv the fruits in being tithed. So now, Rabbaye is challenging Rabbo. Rabbo said, unless the structure is used all year round, it won't be chayiv in a mezuzah. Abaye says, is that really so? Here we have a source that mentions Sukkot HaChag, and it mentions that that's chayiv in a mezuzah. And we're continuing now at the bottom line, the chitemo midiraban. And if you say that this is only a rabbinic requirement, but not really Torah level requirement. So Bishlamo Eruv Mezuzah equal to Meimid Rabbanan. As far as the rules of Eruv and Mezuzah, so those can be relegated to the realm of rabbinic requirements. Hello, Meiser Miko Lameimar Mid Rabbanan. As far as the Meiser Din is concerned, can you say that that's merely rabbinic? Namely, that only from a rabbinic standpoint would you be required to tithe, but on a Torah level, you would not be required to tithe. Well, if you're going to say that, you're going to be running into a big problem. Dilma osi la'afrushi min hachiyuv al hapoter u'min hapoter al hachiyuv. If you're going to look at the sukkah as something that is not really on a Torah level, really binding the food to be tithed, so then on a Torah level, it's technically speaking exempt. Now, if it's exempt and exempt from being tithed, and yet you see an expectation, a rabbinic expectation of my tithing, and people are going to think that you can use that kind of produce, thinking that it's obligated in being tithed, to tithe from it to exempt other produce that entered a real house that is literally obligated in being tithed. Literally, we mean from a Torah level, there's an obligation to it being tithed, because it's reached the stage known as Re'iyas Pnei Habayis. So unless, now, and there's a rule that the Gemara just mentioned, you cannot tithe from produce that's exempt, that's not yet obligated in being tithed, and use that kind of produce to constitute the tithing for other produce that is obligated in being tithed. So that unless you say that the sukkah obligates the produce in being tithed on a deraisa Torah level, this problem will arise. So it must be that the sukkah does obligate the produce brought into it to be tithed. Hence, the question arises that the source featuring Sukkot HaChag, according to Rabbi Yehuda, as being chayav in all these things, including mezuzah, is on a Torah level. Now, the Sukkot HaChag is not a year-round dwelling, and yet it is chayav in mezuzah. That's a kasha on Rabba. Elo Omar Abaye. So Abaye responds, and this Abaye has to deal with the source in which Rabbi Yehuda had mentioned that the Lishka Saparhedrin specifically is chayav in a mezuzah. Why? So Abaye says, b'shiva, the 7 days of prisha, where the Kohen Gadol is kept in the Lishkas Parhedrin, the Kulei Amalo Pligi, the Mechaiva. Everyone will agree that it is Chayev in a mezuzah. Rabbi Yehuda is not going to disagree with that. And as Rashi says, it is Chayev just like a sukkah is Chayev in a mezuzah. Both, by the way, are 7 day dwellings. And Abaye already made the point that the sukkah obligation must be d'oraisa, just like the case of the maestris was d'oraisa. So Abaye says that regarding that, there's no machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanan. Ki pligi b'shar yemois hashana. A controversy will arise regarding the Lishkas Parhedrin during the rest of the year. Rabbanan Savri, the Rabbanan hold, Gazrinon Shar Yemois Hashana Otu Shiva, that we insist on there being a mezuzah the rest of the year in anticipation of those 7 days. Rebuta Savar Loi Gazrinon. And Rebuta says, no, we don't impose such a restriction. Let us glance at the Rashi. Ki pligi b'shar yemos hashana, Rabbanan Savri Gazrinon Shar Yemois Hashana Otu Shiva. The Rabbanan are of that opinion that you impose a requirement during the rest of the year in anticipation of the actual required 7 days. Rabbi Yisrael, Lo Gazrinon Elo Lishkas Parhedrin B'shar Yemois Hashana Hoyolo Mezuzah. Rabbi Yisrael says we don't make a gzera. Rather, the Lishkas of Parhedrin had a mezuzah during the rest of the year. Kidei shetei muchzekes lakol yodeha kebeis diro gemura. Shelo yomru al hakayin b'shivas yemei aprisha bebeis hasurin chavush. So as to prevent people from thinking that, in other words, start again. As far as Rabbi Yehuda is concerned, a mezuzah was placed on the Lishkas Parhedrin throughout the year to create an impression in the eyes of the public. Again, this is not a gezeira, a type of called a rabbinic fence, in order to guarantee that during the 7 days of actual dwelling, which according to Rebbe is required midoraisa to have a mezuzah, so rabbinically we want to have it there the rest of the year so that you don't mess up on those 7 days. Rebbe doesn't accept that. Rebbe says that we have a mezuzah on the Lishkas Parhedrin year round to create the good feeling in the eyes of the public that this is not a jail. Apparently, a jail is not something that's chayev in a mezuzah. So, if there was no mezuzah year-round, people would think that the Kohen Gadol is locked up in a Beis Suas room in a jail for the week before Yom Kippur. So, as to prevent that impression, we have a mezuzah posted there year-round. So, people say, oh, it's not a jail, it's a dwelling. Let us turn back to the Gemara. Amarle Rava, v'ha sukkas hachag b'chag katoni. Rashi points out, upatri rabbonon alma b'shiva nami iko lemanda potar. Abaye claimed that during the 7 days of the prisha of the Kohen Gadol, and courtesy of Rashi, an association was made between those 7 days and the 7 days of Sukkot. And regarding that, Abaye claimed everyone agrees there is a chiyuv of mezuzah. And again, the emphasis is on everyone agreed. Rava's question is that really so? Well, if you look at Sukkot HaChag V'Chag, that was in the source that we saw back at the bottom of Omid Aleph, you had Rabbi Yehuda being Mechayev, and the Chachamim exempting. So in that we see, unlike Abaye, who claimed everyone would agree that it's Chayev. And once again, we're emphasizing that in order to truly appreciate what Rava's question is, you have to learn the Rashi. Then we'll read it again on the top. Elo Amar Abaye b'shivas yomim shel prisha lo polig Rabbi Yehuda devadai mechayev dumya de sukkah. And again, Abaye claimed that those 7 days, whether it's the Lishkas Parhedrin or it's a sukkah, everyone agrees you need to have the mezuzah. Elo Omar Rava. And here we have a long answer, and we've marked it off accordingly. B'shar Yemois Hashana Kulei Alma Lo Pligi Diptura. As far as the rest of the year is concerned, everyone agrees that there is exemption. Ki pligi b'shiva. The argument arises regarding the 7 days. And when we speak about the 7 days, we're going to talk about the 7 days of the Lishkas Parhedrin and the 7 days of the Sukkah. And the Gemara explains, V'sukkah taima l'chud, the Lishka Taima L'chud. Each topic, Sukkah, is dealt with on its own, has its own reasons, and the Lishka has its own reasons. And within each case, we will note a machlokas between Rebbe Yehuda and the Rabbonon. And in fact, what they say, what each one says in one case, they say the opposite in the other case. And we'll see that as we go on. Sukkah, Taima L'chud, and we're using the double underline marking to emphasize, to highlight these two areas, the Sukkah and the Lishka. The Gemara. Sukkah Taima L'chud. Rabbi Yehuda, who is Mechayev in the case of the Sukkah, L'tameh, Rabbi Yehuda is actually consistent with what he has said elsewhere. The Omar, he has said in Maseches Sukkah, Sukkah Diras Keva Bo'inon. The Sukkah is a structure that's supposed to be of a permanent nature. Umechayvo b'mezuzah, being that it is not something that's transient or passing, but rather it's fixed, permanent, so it needs to have a mezuzah. V'rabbonon l'tamayu, the Rabbonon who exempt the Sukkah Sahag from a mezuzah, they too are consistent with their position. The Amri, they hold Sukkah Diras Aroi Bo'inon V'lo Mechayva B'mezuzah. The Sukkah is essentially supposed to be a temporary structure, and hence it doesn't require a mezuzah. As far as the background to this machlokes, that is discussed in Maseches Sukkah, which Emir Sashem we should be zocheh to learn together. The Gemara continues, V'lishka Taima L'chud. As far as the Lishka and the Machlokis concerning the need for a mezuzah there, Rabbonon Savri, the Rabbonon who are Mechayev a mezuzah when it comes to the Lishka, and it was the Rabbonon that said that the Lishka's Parhedrin had a mezuzah because it had a dwelling in there. So the Gemara explains, Rabbonon Savri, Dira Baal Korcho Shmo Dira, an enforced dwelling, as is the case of the Kohen Gadol, has to be there. It's part of his requirements. It's a required dwelling, a forced dwelling. Shmo Dira, that is considered a dwelling, and hence it is required meikur hadin. That means from by letter of the law to have a mezuzah. Rabbi Yehuda Savar. Now Rabbi Yehuda, he does not require meikur hadin based on letter of the law to have a mezuzah. He mentioned in the source back at the bottom of Yud Amit Aleph, he mentioned that it has a mezuzah, but gezerah, that indicates something that's of a rabbinic nature, not something that is letter of the law. So Rabbi Yehuda Savar, Dira Baal Korcha Lo Shma Dira. It is something that one is forced to dwell in is not considered a dwelling. Umid Rabbanan hu detakinu law. And the need for mezuzah by the Lishkas Parhedrin, the chamber in which the Kohen Gadol dwelled for the 7 days prior to Yom Kippur, has a mezuzah from a rabbinic standpoint. Why? Shelo yomru Kohen Gadol chavush bebei soasurim, so that the public should not think that the Kohen Gadol is being incarcerated. True, he's there by force, but it's not a function of incarceration. And how do we demonstrate that? By having a mezuzah. And as we said before, it would appear from this Gemara that according to Rabbi Yehuda, at least, a standard jail or prison would not require a mezuzah. So by having a mezuzah, you're demonstrating that it's not a jail. The Gemara asks, Man Tano Laha de Tonu Rabbonon. Who would be the author of the following? And we continue at the top of Yud Aleph Amud Aleph. We have a Tanaic source. Kol HaShorim Shehoyu Sham Lohoya Lohem Mezuzah Chutz Mishar Nikinor. All of the gates entering the Beis HaMikdash did not have a mezuzah except for the Nikinor gate. Shelifnim Mimenu Lishkas Parhedrin, because within that gate there was the chamber, the Parhedrin chamber. So Lemo Rabbonon hi velo Rabbi Yehuda. It must be that which this source requires a mezuzah for the gate. the Nicanor gate, which leads to the Lishkas Bahedrin. And mind you, we're putting the mezuzah not on the Lishkas Bahedrin, we're putting it on the gate leading to the Lishkas Bahedrin. Why would it have a mezuzah? Well, it must be according to the Rabbanon, for lo Rabbi Yehuda, not according to Rabbi Yehuda. The Rabbi Yehuda, if we were to try to assign this source to Rabbi Yehuda, we would run into a problem. He gufo gzera, that means the need for a mezuzah on the actual chamber was only rabbinic, so as to prevent people from thinking that it's a jail. It's not letter of the law. So when you have something that itself, in this case the chamber itself, is merely rabbinic, we're not going to impose a rabbinic requirement upon atop something that is itself only rabbinic. V'anan nekum v'nigzor gzera, would we arise and impose a gezera, a rabbinic ruling, upon that which is already merely a gezera, a rabbinic ruling? So it would seem then that this source is not according to Rabbi Yehuda. Once again, because Rabbi Yehuda's requirement of the chamber itself, not the gate, the chamber itself is only rabbinic. The Gemara says, Afilu temo Rabbi Yehuda, you can say that this source is in accordance with Rabbi Yehuda, kulo chado gzerohi, when the gzera imposing a mezuzah requirement on the Lishkas Parajan was made, at the very time that it was made, it was a lock, stock, and barrel ruling that the chamber plus the gate leading to it require a mezuzah. So it's not a two-stage issue which runs into the problem of imposing a rabbinic ruling upon a rabbinic ruling. But when the original ruling was made concerning the Lishkas Parhedrin, it included having a mezuzah on the gate. And the logic could be that having no mezuzah on the gate would also have created the problem of creating the appearance of the Kohen Gadol dwelling in a jail. So that in order, if that was our original reason for having the mezuzah, that reason applies equally to the gate leading to the chamber as well as the chamber itself. And that's what's meant by kulo chado gzer. It's all one ruling. Before we conclude, let us just remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.